the San Francisco Experience podcast, brought to you by Jim Herlihy. Independent commentary from a Silicon Valley perspective for a global audience, featuring newsmakers, thought leaders, and authors. Season 26, Episode 17, Soul by Soul, the Evangelical Mission to Spread the Gospel to Muslims. Talking with author Adriana Kahanka. Hi, Adriana. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Evangelical Christian missionaries are actively spreading the gospel in Muslim-majority countries like Afghanistan, Egypt, Indonesia, and Pakistan, where Christian evangelizing is sometimes severely punished. It's tough work, and often undertaken in a clandestine, below-the-radar approach. And since these regions are often hostile to Americans, the missionary work is being done by Christian converts from other countries with a recent history of evangelical proselytizing, like Brazil, the Philippines, South Africa, and South Korea. Working undercover, missionaries hold prayer meetings, distribute Bibles, and sometimes they have to smuggle new converts out of the country. Adriana Kahanka is a Brazilian journalist who's been on the ground following these missionaries. In her new book, she profiles a Brazilian missionary couple, Luis and Gis, working in Afghanistan. Adriana is a graduate of the London School of Economics and the Columbia School of Journalism. She joins us from her office in New York. Hello, Adriana, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me. And yes, I'm ready for our conversation.
Very good. Please take a few moments to tell us about yourself and your work as a journalist.
So I worked most of my career for almost 20 years in daily newspapers in Brazil, initially covering national news, and then I moved to the international desk, and that's how I had the opportunity to travel, mostly to countries where, in war-torn countries and with under political upheaval, and I would report most often or almost always from the ground.
Very impressive. Now, tell us about Luis and Gis. What motivated them to give up a comfortable middle-class life in Brazil to become missionaries in Afghanistan?
Right. This is a very interesting question because it was my own question when I began the book. My own curiosity about this led me to follow them for for more than 10 years. So the way I first met them in Afghanistan in 2008, I was there covering the war for the newspaper in Brazil. And a friend told me about a Brazilian couple running a pizza delivery business in Cabo. And I was like,
it sounds pretty unlikely.
Yeah, very unlikely at the time. And at the time, Brazil had no embassy, no, trade relations with Afghanistan, nothing. So it was, immediately it raised suspicion. I became suspicious of what they were doing. I thought, probably they are mercenaries or others, Afghanistan has this history of opium trade and also Brazil. We ordered pizza right away. but I couldn't get much out of that. We ordered pizza other days during my trip there. But I was, as I said, working for the newspaper. So I returned to Brazil, but that story remained with me. And from time to time, I would just try to find, just pretty much Google Brazil, Afghanistan, and see what came, if anything related to a couple there. I tried to, you know, to talk to them, to call the pizza place. They wouldn't answer. One time they answered but hung up. So I was even more suspicious. Uh-huh. And I think it was a friend at the embassy in Pakistan who said, you know, have you considered that they may be attached to a church? I had not heard of missionaries. I was very unfamiliar with the work of when I was a child. There were these very young missionaries in Brazil, American, you know, as I said, very young, distributing Bibles. That was the traditional missionary for me. And I thought that had happened long ago. And so I became curious about this. I started trying to find it.
Yes.
You know, there are no churches in Afghanistan. So I tried to call and see what, you know, missionaries, what. So I started unfolding this world that I didn't know. And finally, I got this tip of this small city where someone from that city had been or was a missionary in Afghanistan. I started calling all the houses in the city, and people would just hang up on me. Uh-huh. But one said, yes, I'm his father. So I was just calling saying, I think I met your son in Afghanistan. And this man said, yes, he's my son, and he's actually in Brazil. So that's how I contacted Luis for the first time.
We met
at the international airport before he moved. He returned to Afghanistan, and he just said, you know, if you want to, in Afghanistan, come visit us. And I did.
So you went and visit Luis and his wife Gis, and mm-hmm. How did they, for instance, were they really in the pizza business and then quietly on the side mm-hmm. doing this missionary work, or how did they first make contact with Muslims in Afghanistan and talk to them about Christianity, and if they were interested in converting to Christianity? How did they make that contact? Because I would have thought that with the Taliban and the very strict rules and laws in yeah. Afghanistan, that you'd be risking your life to try to convert mm-hmm. a Muslim to Christianity.
Yes, and it is. But it's interesting because Luis first had a dream. That's how he recounts his story. He had a dream where he believes God told him to go to this place where in the map, he saw a map. You know, he had this, what they call vision of a map, and a country popped out. He went to the atlas and saw that was Afghanistan. He was not familiar with Afghanistan. And he started, looking at it, and, you know, soon enough, he was there. He moved there with his wife and two small kids at the time, because he believed that had been God's will.
You
know, that is how he recounts his call, as missionaries and evangelicals in general say, to Afghanistan. But as a journalist, I started researching, you know, where does this come from? And when you look at the facts, that at it, of course, he is a true believer, and I followed them for more than 10 years. I found faith is very, very genuine. But you also see that there is a movement mm-hmm. Of pretty much led by American evangelical leaders who started the what we call the modern missionary movement, global missions movement. Mm-hmm. Pretty much, you know, there is a turning point in 1974 when Billy Graham, the late Billy Graham, convened evangelical leaders all over the world to a meeting in Lausanne. And the movement is today, this movement is called the Lausanne Movement because of the first place where they met. Mm-hmm. And at the time, for the first time in more than a millennium, the center of Christianity had started shifting from the north
to
the south, from the global north to the south. Mm-hmm. And that was also pretty much due to the efforts, massive efforts of American evangelicals to convert the world. If you remember, Latin America was already a Christian region, Latin America, but it was Catholic, Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. And because of the, you know, the evangelical faith and culture that developed in America, which is very individualistic, you know, you have to have this personal relationship with God, you can talk to God, this is very common among evangelicals. Latin America, the Latinos from Catholicism to evangelicalism, because they considered Catholicism was a very, you know, bureaucratic faith, yes. You know?
Tell us about Hussein, because was Hussein their first convert, and they had a very close relationship with Hussein.
Yeah.
Tell us about Hussein.
So when Luis first went to Afghanistan, he knew nothing about either Afghanistan or even the, you know, the missionary work abroad. He started working with this NGO, and he very, very soon met one of the employees, one of the staff members of this NGO was a young boy who was Hussein's son. And he would ask, you know, this NGO was, we cannot name it because it's dangerous, mm-hmm. but it was also a cover for missionary work. They would have meetings underground in a room underground with no signs of Christian, you know, Christian crosses or anything, but they would have the meetings, the church meetings every week, every day for foreigners, every week for Afghans converted. And in these meetings, the Hussein's son would say, you know, pray for my father. He just returned to Afghanistan. So his father had been a refugee. Hussein had been a refugee in Pakistan, where he first heard about Christianity from another organization who was distributing food to refugees there during the Soviet occupation. And with the food, they would smuggle Bibles to the refugees. And Hussein had read the Bible, but he didn't really know much about Christianity. So he turned there, and when Luis heard his son, Luis saw that as an opportunity. As you said, it's very dangerous for missionaries. So the way they operate is really through friendships.
Yes.
So Luis saw an opportunity to become friends, you know, to become close to Afghans. And he invited Hussein. At the time, he had no place to live. He had just returned from the refugee camp in Pakistan to Afghanistan. And so he gave a place in a room in his own house for Hussein to live. And, you know, Hussein later told me that story. You know, he was a very noble man, a Pashtun, which is the main ethnicity in Afghanistan. Uh-huh. And he would cry, you know, to remember how Luis gave him a home, and he became his most faithful convert.
Let me ask you a question. To a devout Muslim, and of course, let's not forget that when a Muslim, especially in a very strict country like Afghanistan, and it's even stricter still because the Taliban is in charge now, mm-hmm. and they are very strict indeed, when a Muslim in a country like Afghanistan tries to convert, they can face the death penalty, right,
mm-hmm.
for being an apostate. Now, but tell me, for Hussein or for any other Muslim that you came across in meeting with the missionary community, what was the appeal to a Muslim about Christianity? What engaged them first? Why would they want to take that kind of a risk of facing the death penalty to convert to Christianity?
Yeah, so the way I saw that is that most of these people were desperate. Most of the converts in Afghanistan are from our Hazaras, which is another ethnicity. It's a minority, and they are persecuted by the Taliban and even other, you know, other factions and even you know, groups, religious groups, because they are Shia, not Sunni. So mm-hmm. you have Islam, you have these two lines of Islam, Sunni and Shias, and they would be often target of attacks. So you can, you know, we could see that relation, you know, between poverty, desperation, persecution, and these people seeking something else, because the people who were persecuting them were Muslims, and that happened later in Syria and Iraq as well. So I have this sentence that one Syrian convert told me that was, you know, ISIS is the best ambassador of Jesus, you know, because yes. The ones really converting people, you know, making people leave Islam in Syria and Iraq at the time was ISIS, because of its brutality against their own people and their own, even within their own religion. Most people that ISIS killed, you know, we had the ISIS persecution against Christians made the headlines, but if you see the numbers, they were killing mostly Muslims. Mm-hmm. So I interviewed tons of them who would tell me they became just frustrated, to say the least, with their religious peers.
Now, for the time that you spent in Afghanistan, now you were there as a journalist, you weren't a missionary, but you were living with Luis and Gis, who of course mm-hmm. are missionaries, and you would have been familiar with the other missionaries in the other evangelical missionaries in Afghanistan. Did you ever feel personally threatened? Did you feel that you were at risk, or that did you ever feel unsafe at any time?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And they went through, you know, a person like Hussein, he went through hell for their faith, for his faith. Hussein had faced persecution, and he even survived an attack in Pakistan when he was still in Pakistan, for just because he had received the Bible, and he went to seek for people who could tell him about that, about Christianity. And just by seeking that, just by, you know, visiting this pastor who was related also to Louis in Pakistan, he faced persecution. He survived an attempt of kidnapping and another attempt of, you know, someone shot from the car, at him on the streets. And two of his best friends, who were also Muslim converts, were brutally tortured and murdered. Once in Afghanistan, Hussein, you know, his son died, one of his sons died. Louis himself believes the boy was sick, but he was very young, and Hussein later told me that he believed he had been poisoned for being a Christian, because Hussein later talked about Christianity to his sons and daughters, and they too converted. Louis baptized them, some of them in his own bathtub at home, because you cannot do baptisms in Afghanistan in the open. But they later find out a way of playing something like a game, and they would go to the Garka Lake, which is a very idyllic place, beautiful place near Kabul, and they would baptize their converts in the water, but just pretending to be playing a game. So these things was what I could see there. But Hussein later was at the office, which was also a place of worship and Bible translation in Kabul, when the Taliban attacked the place. He was working with South African missionaries, and he was also there. People were killed. He had to escape to India. Then he went back because he couldn't find a visa anywhere. And in 2021, when the Taliban made the return to power in Afghanistan, he was pretty much desperate. At that day, I myself started receiving messages from him. We have this group that I also, they allowed me to be part of, a group of missionaries working in the Middle East and Asia. And the Afghans were very desperate when the Taliban came back, and Lewis flew to Pakistan and he mobilized the global church, and he could smuggle 87 Afghans, including Hussein, out of Afghanistan through the mountains in Pakistan. And I went to see the last time I saw Hussein was in Brazil, where he was a refugee.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you another question, because this is a very compelling story that you're relating to us, Adriana. The fact that Luis and Gis and you are Brazilian, the fact that you're Brazilian and Hussein, of course, was an Afghan, how would Brazilians relate to Afghans versus Americans relating to, can you explain that to me? Were there any subtle differences in the relationship between Luis, Gis, and you, old Brazilians, and Hussein versus with Americans?
Yeah, that's a great question, because what happened was that after 9/11, it became very dangerous for American missionaries to go into the field. And this was very clear since the beginning of the war in Afghanistan. Like months later, there were two American missionaries killed in Lebanon. There were another missionary killed in the the Philippines, and more. And in Pakistan, also, there was this group of evangelicals who were killed. And the reason they were being killed was because in the Middle East, people associate Christianity with the U.S. power. Mm. And that's because for years, for centuries, American missionaries would follow the army, would follow the advance of the U.S. power, not because of, that was something planned, but just because they often dependent on safety, for their own safety, on protection of American diplomats and American soldiers. So missionaries would often go to places where American soldiers, America was going, right? So missionaries, this mission, global mission movement advanced with the advance of America to power. And if you remember in 9/11, the president was George W. Bush, who was very much associated with, he was an evangelical himself, and he was very much associated with very outspoken leaders in the, white, American white evangelical community, like Franklin Graham and other leaders, who spoke occasionally in very derogatory terms about Islam after September 11th. Mm-hmm. And that resonated in the Muslim world as just another crusade. So, of course, those radicals, they would not be able sometimes to reach, to attack American soldiers. They would just attack the Christian next door, whoever that was. And even if they were Pakistanis, Afghans, because they were associated with America. And then some American leaders and Latin American leaders at the time just, realized they had this massive number of people who had converted to evangelical Christianity in Latin America and in Africa as well, that they could use as missionaries. Mm-hmm. And maybe that wouldn't be as dangerous to them. And they started, and Luis is pretty much one of the missionaries in this very first wave of missionaries. He arrived in Afghanistan in 2003. And later, what the mission, the global mission leaders realized was that Latin Americans were more successful, actually, in the Middle East, because they relate, the hospitality, yes, the culture of hospitality, even the situation, the violence, the danger was not as uncommon to Brazilians or South Africans as they might be for Americans.
Let me ask you a question. You followed the rise of Pentecostalism for years. Why did the Pentecostal movement turn its focus to the Middle East? I remember when I lived in Ecuador in Latin America many years ago, I was there working for a U.S. bank, And when I worked in Ecuador, I was familiar with some of the Pentecostal evangelical missionaries, and they were young men mostly from the United mm-hmm. States, and they would come down, and they were very earnest, and they would learn Spanish, and they would knock on my door, or you know, they were very insistent. But why did the Pentecostal movement turn its focus from Latin America, let's say, to the Middle East? Because again, the Middle East has to be one of the most difficult because Islam is so mm-hmm. opposed to accepting any other religion other than Islam. Why did the Pentecostal movement turn its focus to the Middle East?
So partially it's a natural development. Since the beginning of the missionary movement, the idea is to convert the world. Evangelicals believe that once, especially the premillennials, they believe that they need to spread the gospel. Everybody needs to know about Jesus before Jesus can return, which is, you know, called the second coming. Mm-hmm. And so most missionaries are motivated by this, by the second coming, and they want to evangelize the world. You have, in the beginning, the Puritans coming to America was pretty much a missionary enterprise. They came to the New World to start a new life, but also these godly commonwealth. The Puritans tried to reform the Church of England. They at some point realized they could not reform it, and they aimed at in this new world to build a godly commonwealth that people would look at as God's blessings. Mm-hmm. If they progressed, people would see God's blessings upon this experiment. Then America pretty much was, developed out of this missionary endeavor. Mm-hmm. And Americans were the first global missionaries. They started to send missionaries out, even to the Middle East, in the very beginning, even in the 18th century still. And certainly the 19th century was a century of geographic outreach, where the mission became global. But they are very particularly successful in Latin America. And that was mm-hmm. because Latin America was already Christian.
Yes.
Latin Americans were not unfamiliar with Christianity as Muslims are. What changed there is that Pentecostalism was this very passionate faith. They translated the Bible. The evangelicals were the first to translate the Bible in every, pretty much almost every language, while the Catholic Church was still speaking in Latin, a mm-hmm. language that no one could understand. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church is very hierarchic. You need to have, you need to study theology for many, many years to become a priest. And that was not the case in evangelicalism. The way the U.S. American evangelical faith and culture developed is that everyone can receive the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, and become a church leader or a missionary. So that was very, very powerful, very inclusive faith for Latin Americans, who at the time in the 19th century were more than 80% of Latin Americans were illiterate. Mm-hmm. So we have this church that is very welcoming, inclusive, that has music and drums, they could relate it to that because of other traditions, African traditions, indigenous traditions that they could see at that church as part, they felt part of this movement. Uh-huh. And so the church was very successful in Brazil. And then as this mission leader told me, Ricardo Luna is a leader of the missions movement. He lives here in the U.S. and he once told me, first you convert, then you train, then you send. Right. And mm-hmm. that's pretty much what happened to Latin America. And it was accelerated by 9/11 because of the danger that American missionaries faced. Mm-hmm. They were replaced by Latino missionaries.
Well, Adriana, in the remaining few minutes of the podcast, are you still in contact with Luis? And is Luis able to return to Afghanistan?
I am in still contact with them. I've been following them for 10 years, so I miss them now that the book is ready. You live with them, these characters in a nonfiction book for so long that they become part of your life. So I talk to them. I cannot say if they are back in Afghanistan. I can say that I spoke to one missionary, another missionary, also Brazilian, but not Luis Ortiz, who is in Afghanistan right now. I just spoke to her a few days ago. So you still have people doing that. And yeah, I talk to them a lot. And it's interesting that when Latin Americans go to the Middle East and start converting Middle Easterns, then you have this, the very wars, the wars in Syria and Afghanistan and Iraq, provoked this massive wave of refugees. And
yes,
many refugees are now in Europe and in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And among them, there are Christian converts who are reviving the church in the U.S. and Europe. That's very interesting because they are very new in their faith. So you have the character, the Iraq convert to Christianity that I mentioned right in the beginning of the book. He lives now in California and he preaches among his fellow refugees. That's very interesting.
That's a very inspiring story. And Adriana, where can our listeners buy a copy of your book, Soul by Soul?
Yeah, so Soul by Soul is on Amazon and all the bookstores, I believe, in the U.S. And you can also reach me at Adriana Carranca, that's Carranca, my name and surname, on social media. If you have any trouble finding the book, please let me know. And please, yeah, spread the word, as they say.
And do you have an X handle?
I'm sorry?
Do you have a Twitter handle, an X handle? You know, Twitter, the social media.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Social media. Yeah. Yes, I'm on Twitter and Instagram and all social media.
So,
and it's at Adriana Carranca.
Adriana Carranca. Very good. And in closing, what is your next project? What is your next? What is your? You're so passionate. You've given up so much of your life to this particular topic. What is your next project?
Yeah, so I live in Harlem now, and I'm starting to look at the. I belong to a interracial family, and I'm starting to look at this issue. But I'm really in the beginning. I just finished this. And I'm starting to learn more about racial tensions and all that. Something, and I love Harlem, so I'm just dying to dive into this community and learn more about it. As in the beginning of Soul by Soul, I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but I'm driven by my own curiosity. So I just follow my instinct
and
it has worked so far.
Well, let me do this. I want to invite you to come back to our podcast, The San Francisco Experience, when you get a little further down the road in your your study in Harlem and racial relations. It would be wonderful to have a Brazilian perspective on Harlem
and
racial relations in Harlem. So the door is always open. We look forward to having you come back to the podcast to share your research on that new subject with us.
Thank you so much. That was really a lovely conversation. I enjoyed it very much. And I hope you like reading the book.
I loved reading the book, and I hope that all of our listeners will be able to get it from Amazon or their bookstore. And the title is Soul by Soul. And Adriana Carranca, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And for our listeners, today's episode is number 523. Listen to us on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, 18 platforms, and join our listener audience in 60 countries. FeedSpot has recognized us as a top 25 California news podcast, ranking us number 12. This has been the San Francisco Experience Podcast with Jim Herlihy, coming to you from San Francisco.